Even when a scientist said 2 degrees was just an estimate. On Kele Island, the tides were underestimated. Patients sleeping in a clinic with a nuclear history threaded into their bloodlines woke to a wild water world, a rushing rapid assault, a sewage of syringe and gauze. Later, they wheeled their hospital beds out, left them resting in the sun. They must be stained, rusted. Our people creaking brackish from salt spray and nuclear radiation blasts. So, so tired. Wandering, wondering if the world will leave us out to dry in the sun. Will they dust their hands of us, wipe them clean? My father tells me that irik, the Marshallese word for when the tide is nearest an equilibrium, is the best time for fishing. Maybe that's what I'm doing, fishing for recognition, writing the world, willing the world to find its balance. So that people remember that beyond the discussions, beyond the policy, the statistics, there are faces all the way out here. There is a baby stomping squeaky yellow light-up shoes across the edge of a reef, not yet underwater.
Okay. That was Kathy Jetnil Kijener of the Marshall Islands. And that does it for our broadcast. A very special thanks to our local crew here in Marrakesh. Rania Khader, Danya Nader, Phil Hasty, Mohammed Shama, Sean Russell, Ahmed Galal, Amr Yassin, and Fatima Zahra. Happy birthday, Fatima. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Noreen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Ndur, Andre Lewis. Special thanks to Nicole Salazar, John Hamilton, Dennis Moynihan, Renee Feltz, Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Niguer, and Paul Huckabee, our engineers. Special thanks to Miriam Barnard, Rob Young, Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us from Marrakesh, Morocco.
Cebu Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Aftermath, part of the Brown Paper series produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs November 28th at 7 p.m. at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. In Mary Burrell's 1919 one-act, John Thornton, a young black soldier who has served his country in World War I, comes home to rural South Carolina. His homecoming is disrupted when he learns that someone close to him has been lynched by a white mob. Again, that's Aftermath, produced by Triangle Productions, November 28th at 7 p.m. at The Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Winona LaDuke, speaking Saturday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the EMU Ballroom at the University of Oregon in Eugene. Winona LaDuke will speak on nature's historic position as property and the international call to legally recognize nature's right to exist, persist, and naturally evolve. This global movement is dedicated to normalizing the notion of rights of nature. Again, that's Winona LaDuke speaking on the rights of nature, Saturday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the EMU Ballroom on the corner of 19th Avenue and University Street in Eugene. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland, the time is now 5:02 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News, and this program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, celebrating the holidays with handmade gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest every weekend, now through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Trump transition team has nominated three loyalists to head the CIA, the Justice Department, and as National Security Advisor.
Climate talks have wrapped up in Marrakesh.
An Oregon judge is charged with illegally providing a firearm to a felon.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Friday, November 18th, 2016. I'm Ray Bodwell.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. Continuing the trend that started with the choice of Steve Bannon as senior advisor, President-elect Donald Trump's transition team has nominated three more conservative white males to senior positions in his administration. Former General Michael Flynn has been proposed as national security advisor. Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions has been proposed as attorney general, and Kansas Representative Mike Pompeo has been named as director of the CIA. Sessions and Pompeo will need to be approved by the Senate, but Flynn's position requires no congressional approval. FSRN's Nell Abram has more.
President-elect Donald Trump's transition office announced its picks for nominees to three high-ranking positions Friday. Longtime Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions for Attorney General, Kansas Congressman Mike Pompeo for CIA Chief, and Lieutenant General Michael Flynn as Presidential Assistant for National Security Affairs. The latter used to lead the Pentagon's Defense Intelligence Agency, but reportedly resigned under pressure in 2014. Pompeo is a member of the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party, vocal opponent of the nuclear deal with Iran, and helped lead the congressional investigation into the Benghazi incident. Sessions is known for his hardline stance against immigration and was famously denied a job as federal judge due to concerns about racial prejudice. If confirmed, he will, among other things, be responsible for enforcing the nation's civil rights laws. Friday's announcement comes on the heels of the controversial appointment of former Breitbart News executive Stephen Bannon as White House chief advisor and strategist.
Mr. President, I've been in politics for five decades. I've not seen anything like what we're seeing today in America. Bannon lost the popular vote by 2 million votes, is now president-elect.
Outgoing Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid is among more than 160 Democratic members of Congress calling for Trump to rescind Bannon's appointment. In a speech on the Senate floor Tuesday, he entered into the record a package of accounts of hate crimes from around the nation and shared anecdotes from people close to him.
We have a responsibility to be the voice of millions of Americans sitting at home, afraid that they're not welcome anymore. Donald Trump's America. We have a responsibility to prevent Trump's bullying, aggressive behavior from becoming normalized in the eyes of America, especially the millions of young people who are watching and wondering. For example, if sexual assault is now a laughing matter, we have a responsibility to say that it is not normal for the KKK, Ku Klux Klan, to celebrate the election of a president they view as their champion.
Earlier this week, a former fundraiser for the Trump campaign cited the World War II era internment of Japanese Americans as a legal precedent for a registry of Muslim immigrants. Trump's communication director, Jason Miller, walked back that remark Thursday, saying that Trump has not advocated for a registry based solely on religion, pointed to a years-long tracking program in place under then-presidents Bush and Obama, and will roll out his own so-called vetting program after he's inaugurated. The NCERS tracking program Miller refers to targeted immigrants from Muslim-majority nations and was suspended indefinitely in 2011.
For Free Speech Radio News, that was Nell Abrams reporting.
Nonprofit organizations opposed to the policies of President-elect Donald Trump have seen a surge in donations since November 8th. In the week following the election, Planned Parenthood, the longtime supporter of women's reproductive rights, received donations from over 200,000 people. This is 40 times more than in a normal week. And in a humorous aside, the organization noted that over 46,000 of the donations were made in the name of Vice President-elect Mike Pence, an ardent opponent of abortion rights. During the same period, the American Civil Liberties Union received over $7 million in donations from 120,000 donors. Normally, they would have collected less than $50,000 during that time. Comedian John Oliver of HBO's Last Week Tonight has been credited with helping to create the increase in donations. During a show that aired immediately following the election, he urged viewers to support causes that they thought were under threat from the policies of Trump. One of the groups Oliver referenced was the Trevor Project, a relatively small nonprofit which provides help to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth. In the 5 days following the show, the group received over $165,000 in donations, about six times what they would have received in a normal week.
Over the objections of Democrats, House Republicans voted Wednesday to double the budget for a special panel investigation investigating business practices and medical procedures of abortion providers. They voted to add $800,000 to the budget to the Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives, bringing the total spent this year to nearly $1.6 million. The 14-member panel was formed last year after the Center for Medical Progress posted an undercover video accusing Planned Parenthood of selling the tissues and organs of aborted fetuses. The video in question appears to have been carefully edited, and its authenticity has been questioned. Planned Parenthood vigorously denied the allegations and in January of this year filed a lawsuit against the Center for Medical Progress, alleging that the group and its members engaged in wire and mail fraud in violation of the RICO Act. The Center for Medical Progress is an anti-abortion organization founded by David Daladian, a California-based pro-life activist. Daladian was charged with misdemeanor for emailing an offer to buy a fetal tissue. Let me restate that. Daladian was charged with a misdemeanor for emailing an offer to buy fetal tissue for $1,600. The charge was later dropped on a technicality.
Concerns that President-elect Donald J. Trump and his family will use their new positions to build up their global businesses appear to be well-founded. Trump's daughter Ivanka was photographed at a private meeting between the incoming president and the prime minister of Japan last night. She is the vice president of development and acquisition for the family company, which is called simply the Trump Organization. The images, which were not taken by press photographers, as no reporters were allowed in, have triggered criticism that Trump plans to turn his private business over to his children, even as he delivers global business opportunities to them through his position as president. Ivanka was also taken to task this week for using her appearance on 60 Minutes to market a $10,000 bracelet from her personal jewelry company. The New York Times reported today that Ivanka Trump Fine Jewelry sent out a memo to reporters called a, quote, style alert, with a photo of her from the 60 Minutes interview calling attention to the bracelet. The Wall Street Journal today published an editorial urging Trump to sell off his hotels, golf courses, and other assets and to place the cash in a blind trust.
Conservation groups want federal agencies to stop a coyote killing contest in southern Oregon. They say the groups in charge of the event this weekend haven't obtained the proper permits and could threaten endangered gray wolves in the area. The Oregon News Service and KBOO's Kyle Carezzi have more.
Conservation organizations want federal agencies to stop a coyote hunting contest this weekend in southern Oregon. The contest, called the Lake County Coyote Calling Derby, has raised concerns that gray wolves, which are protected under the Endangered Species Act and confirmed to be in Lake County, could be mistaken for coyotes and killed. Amarok Weiss of the Center for Biological Diversity also says killing coyotes would do little to protect the livestock, a concern among some ranchers. She says, in fact, when breeding pairs of coyotes are killed off, the opposite result often happens. Six organizations, including the Center for Biological Diversity and the Humane Society of the United States, say the contest organizers have not acquired a special use permit needed because the contest is expected to take place on U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management land. A review of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service would have been required to obtain the permit. Weiss says contests like these are cruel and inhumane and that they are not unique to Lake County or Oregon. Although many still take place, she says they are harder to find now. The contest is sponsored by the Lake County chapter of the Oregon Hunters Association and Robinson Heating and Cooling and scheduled to take place this Saturday and Sunday. For KBOO and the Oregon News Service, I'm Kyle Carezzi.
Judge Vance Day of Marion County was indicted yesterday on four counts, including providing a felon with a firearm and using his position to obtain a benefit. Day also famously hung a portrait of Adolf Hitler in an art display he put up in the Marion County Courthouse with the theme Hall of Heroes. According to the Oregonian newspaper, the State Judicial Fitness Commission recommended earlier this year that Day be ousted from his job for a long list of reasons, including that he allegedly refused to marry same-sex couples. He faces those charges at the state Supreme Court next April. This is the first time that a sitting judge has been indicted in Oregon.
In an announcement that would have pleased the late Salvador Dali, post-truth has been named Word of the Year by the Oxford Dictionaries. The dictionary defines post-truth as, quote, relating to or denoting circumstances in which objective facts are less influential in shaping public opinion than appeals to emotion and personal belief, end quote. The dictionary noted that there was a spike in the use of the word in relation to both the Brexit vote and the U.S. presidential election.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather calls for a cloudy day with afternoon showers and temperatures in the high 50s. You can expect similar conditions east of the Cascades and Hood River. On this date, in 1993, 21 political parties approved a new constitution for South Africa, expanding voting rights and ending the rule of the country's white majority. The quote of today is from Nelson Mandela, who said, "I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers that fear."
Yesterday, the only children's hospital in the besieged city of Aleppo was bombed for the second time in a week, prompting its evacuation. The attack came from warplanes as well as missiles launched from a Russian aircraft carrier positioned off the coast of Syria. Many of the transferred patients were victims of chlorine gas attacks and were having trouble breathing. At first, doctors and nurses took babies from their incubators to the basement using their mobile foams as flashlights, but later drove them through the shelling to continue their treatment in another location. There are only 4 functioning hospitals remaining in opposition-held areas, serving at least 250,000 people. Russia and Syrian government and the Syrian government denied intentionally striking the hospital, but the World Health Organization said that health facilities have been targeted 126 times this year. UN humanitarian officials pointed out that things are becoming bleak for those trapped in Aleppo. Winter is approaching and the stockpiled food and medical supplies are dwindling due to the siege. UN convoys stocked with relief supplies are being targeted as well, and so far none have reached their destinations. In a Washington Post editorial, the Syrian America Medical Society asked for people to put pressure on their governments so that desperately needed supplies can be delivered to the people of Aleppo.
The names and histories of people being tapped for senior-level positions in the Trump administration are fueling concerns that the hardline rhetoric aimed at immigrants, Muslims, and refugees during the campaign may soon turn into policy. Earlier this week, a former fundraiser for the Trump campaign cited the World War II-era internment of Japanese Americans as a legal precedent for registry of Muslim immigrants. FSRN's Nell Abram spoke with Tom Akita, executive director of Densho, an organization committed to preserving the history of U.S.'s incarceration of Japanese Americans during the Second World War.
Tommy Ketta is executive director of DENSHO, an organization committed to preserving the history of the U.S.'s incarceration of Japanese Americans during the Second World War. Welcome to FSRN.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
A spokesperson for a pro-Trump political action committee went on national television Wednesday and cited the internment of Japanese Americans as legal precedent for reestablishing a registry of Muslim immigrants in the country. Why should that set off alarm bells?
Well, so when we think back to what happened to Japanese Americans during World War II, in a climate of fear and hate, similar to what we're feeling now, that a vulnerable community was targeted and their rights stripped and they were placed in concentration camps in the United States. And what we have now learned was that the government knew that Japanese Americans weren't a military threat, and yet they went ahead with this. And so they ended up apologizing and admitting a mistake. And so the alarm should be going off in terms of a similar mistake happening again today.
Is the legal basis for the internment still on the books, or was it overturned?
So during World War II, there was a case, Fred Korematsu, challenged the government, and the Supreme Court ruled 6-3 against Fred, saying that the incarceration of Japanese Americans, the Executive Order 9066, was legal and constitutional. That order or conviction was later vacated in the 1980s at the Federal Court of Appeals, stating that through the writ of quorum nobis, which is an unusual writ showing or stating that the government had gross negligence. And what happened was evidence was withheld from the Supreme Court. Intelligence reports showing that Japanese Americans were as loyal as any other segment in the population. And so critical information was withheld from the Supreme Court. And because of that, Fred Korematsu's conviction was vacated. And so if you talk to legal scholars, they would say the Supreme Court ruling back in the 1940s has no legs, because after the Federal Court of Appeals vacated the conviction, the government chose not to bring it back to the Supreme Court so that it could be overturned at the Supreme Court level.
Can you briefly explain how larger American society in the 1940s came to accept the confiscation of property and detention of an entire segment of the population? Do you see those same rationales emerging again?
I do. In a climate of fear and hate, It really silences, the majority. We are led to believe that a certain population is dangerous or suspicious, and with that, people start doubting, what it is to be an American, and they become silent. And that's what happened to Japanese Americans, that even though they were loyal Americans, they were targeted as being dangerous, and the rest of America allowed that to happen. And so we have to be vigilant that this doesn't happen again. That I'm reminded of the poem Niemöller made during World War II, in terms of first they came for the socialists and I did not speak up because I wasn't a socialist, and then they came for the trade unionists and I did not speak up because I was not a trade unionist. And then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak up because I wasn't a Jew. And then when they came for me, there was no one left to speak up for me. And I feel the same thing could happen in our country today, where certain groups are singled out, and then they are attacked, and then they're isolated, and then they're removed, and no one says anything. So we have to speak up now.
Tommy Ketta, your organization, DENSHO, is calling on people to be upstanders, not bystanders. What does that mean?
When we talk about being an upstander, when you see something happening that doesn't seem right, speak up. First you have to be safe. We always say don't put yourself into a a dangerous situation. But when you do see something and you're able to, you'll speak up because it does make a difference. In particular, I think white people need to really speak up. So often, it's communities of color that are speaking out and challenging the status quo in terms of where racism and other things exist. And I think it's important that all Americans speak up and not it doesn't just become a thing that people of color have to do. Get involved, talk with people, let your congressmen and others know how you feel. Now's time for us to really be out there talking.
Are there other parallels you see between the political and social climate today in the United States and that during World War II?
We have to pay attention. I think when you think of what's happened historically, and I know a lot about the Japanese-American incarceration during World War II, it happens in little steps. And what we saw was it oftentimes starts with words, that the press, the media, politicians will start saying things about a particular segment in our population as being dangerous, suspicious, and those words then lead to action. In the case today, we're hearing words about possibly registering Muslim immigrants. And so what you do is you get this gradual chain of events that happen, step after step, that by themselves may seem okay, but it's part of this slide that we're going into. And so the parallels that I see happening today is I'm starting to see that same slide happening.
Tommy Ketta is executive director of Densho, an organization committed to preserving the history of Japanese Americans incarcerated in the United States during the Second World War. For FSRN, I'm Nell Abram.
In global news, as world representatives wrap up their climate talk in Marrakesh, Morocco, the Arctic is seeing extreme warmth beyond anything previously recorded at this time of year, prompting alarm from climate scientists around the world. To put the observation in context, 2016 is shaping up to be the hottest year on record, beating the 2015 record, which beat the 2014 record, which beat the 2013 record, for being the hottest year the Earth has known for as long as records have been kept. The World Meteorological Organization said human-induced global warming had contributed to at least half the extreme weather events studied in recent years, with the risk of extreme heat increasing by 10 times in some cases. On Monday, 365 U.S. companies and major investors sent a letter to President Obama and President-elect Trump, urging that the United States not abandon the Paris Climate Accords and remain committed to the development of low-carbon energy.
Donald Trump may believe that climate change is a Chinese hoax, but don't tell that to the residents of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Monday's super new moon was a prime example of the dilemma they face. The moon was both full and unusually close to the Earth and created a so-called king tide. King tides frequently result in extensive flooding up and down the Florida coast, even when the weather is crystal clear. This week, homeowners found themselves wading through knee-deep water to get to their cars and watched their lawns disappear under salt water. They even ran the risk of having their trash pails float away if they didn't tie them down. In the years ahead, it is anticipated that the state will have to spend billions to build seawalls, raise roadways, and install pumping systems to keep the water at bay. It is estimated that by the year 2100, sea levels could rise enough to submerge 1 in 8 Florida homes. Now, in addition to keeping an eye out for hurricanes, Floridians have to pay attention to the tides and the phases of the moon.
Under the hashtag #KidsLettersToTrump, children throughout the country have posted letters of kindness to the president-elect on social media. The letters are collected on the Facebook group Dear President Trump, Letters from Kids About Kindness, where anyone with an account can become a member. Seattle resident Molly Spence Sahajami created the page that day after the election. The group has over 10,000 members. Many of the letters ask Trump to be kind, tell him why he should be kind, show him how to be kind, and wish him luck on his presidency. The page and hashtag serving as a learning opportunity for kids and a way to spread positivity post-election.
A heartbroken and frightened world responded last night when the beloved Sesame Street character Grover apparently freaked out. The main Sesame Street Twitter account tweeted a different take on the first line of a popular children's book that features the fuzzy blue puppet. It's called The Monster at the end of this book. Sesame Street's tweet said, "Did you know that there's a monster on Twitter?" Then Grover chimed in from his own account with, quote, "What did that say?" The tweet storm that ensued saw adults around the world tweeting, retweeting, and posting their own comments, which seemed to have tapped a collective sense of fear and worry in the wake of the Donald Trump election. Local social media personality Mary Newmare summed up the feelings of many when she wrote, quote, "I'm just sitting here crying and tweeting at Grover." Even notorious internet troll Will Wheaton's hard edge melted enough for him to tweet, quote, "For the 3 million of you who don't know, the monster at the end of this book is one of my favorite things ever to exist in my life."
Listening to the KABU Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Joe Lino, Kyle Qureshi, Stacy Holtman, and Jenka Soderberg. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News, and our engineer is Ian Gadwell. The KABU Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. The podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KABU News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Ray Bodwell. Coming up Monday morning on KABU, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on More Talk Radio, hosts Cecil and Celeste confront the fear and panic that have set in since the election of Donald Trump.